Hello, and welcome to 15 Minutes with Charlie. I'm your host, Charlie Meacham. I want to help you communicate more effectively, and I think that use of anecdotes can get you there. Explore this with me as I share anecdotes from my book, Total Anecdotal, and ask guests to react in relation to their own experience and careers. In this episode, I'm interviewing Annika Sorenstam. Annika has had over 100 golf victories worldwide, more than any other golfer. She's the first female player to shoot a 59, and she was the first female to play in a men's PGA Tour event since 1945. Her foundation, the Annika Foundation, is thriving because of her commitment and dedication. And I think she is the ultimate definition of giving back. So listen to this special 15 Minutes with Annika.
I've been privileged to be part of Annika's life after golf, as well as during her golfing years. And I think as much as anyone I've ever known, she has given back and is continuing to contribute, particularly to junior girls golf. So, Annika, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. And after reading your book, now my head is so big-headed after that beautiful introduction.
You probably saw some of my thoughts on when you start a speech after a nice introduction, when you you say, after that introduction, I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say.
Exactly.
Okay, well, here we are. What I'm going to do is throw out to you several anecdotes that are in the book and simply ask you to tell us how that particular anecdote has been a part of your life, if it has. And we'll start with the anecdote, which is under the heading in the book of Dealing with Adversity. And it goes like this. When dealing with difficult situations, it is critical that you not do things that make the situation even worse than it is. As someone put it, if you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is to stop digging. I'd like your reaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to explain it. You know, throughout my career, you know, I've obviously been in different situations, and some have been easy and some have been difficult. I think this is, it's a normal part of the journey. But I would say that one journey that comes to my mind, I've been a professional for a long time. As you know, as professional in anything, you work very hard, you sacrifice a lot of things. And, you know, I push myself to different level all the time to reach my goals. And I worked really hard in the gym and I hit a lot of shots. So, of course, maybe it's natural that the body will eventually take its toll. And I will never forget in 2007, I had some neck pains, and stubborn as I am, and I didn't really think that there was anything wrong. I thought maybe I slept on the wrong side, or, you know, all the miles that we take on airplanes, maybe I was sitting a little crooked. And so maybe that's why my neck was hurting. And I would hit golf shots and they would not fly as far. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing because my swing felt really good. And I'll never forget, I had a player to say, well, maybe you should have your neck checked. Maybe there is something wrong. And I said, there's nothing wrong with my neck. But I said, okay. I remember driving down to our good friend, Bruce Thomas, who's been a doctor for the LPGA for a long time. And he said, well, let's take a little x-ray. Let's do a scan and see what's going on with your neck. And reluctantly, I did that. And the results came back that I have a very badly herniated disc in my neck and my back.
Wow.
And I said, okay, what does that mean? I have a tea time tomorrow at 8 o'clock. How am I going to get there? And he said, no, I don't think you understand. You won't be playing for a long time. And if you continue to play, you might hurt yourself for the rest of your life. So, you know, it was a difficult situation in the sense that I had to face the reality. It was time to take a break. It was time to start taking care of myself. It was time to start balancing my schedule a little bit and not wear myself down too much. I took, what was hard about this situation was that it was in the middle of the season. And as you know, on the LPGA, that's when the big tournaments come up. This was in May, and the tournament was in my hometown, Orlando, and I really didn't want to miss it. But I was forced to do it. But again, I took a break. I worked with some trainers. And during the 6 weeks of rehab, I started to think about my next chapter in life. And that's actually when a lot of my Annika Brando businesses was kind of the birth of those ideas, because I was stuck at home with a neck brace and I had nothing else to do than think and analyze what I needed to do. So something good came out of something bad.
Very, very interesting. And in other words, when you found yourself in a hole, you quit digging. You came back strong. The next anecdote is under the category of environment, and it's a saying that I love, which is, save the Earth, it's the only planet with chocolate. Now, I'm not going to ask you whether you like chocolate or not. What I quote this anecdote for, I'd like to get your thoughts on environment, the warming of the planet, how important golf can be to that kind of an effort. Any thoughts that you have on the environment and caring for it?
Yeah, no, I think this is a very important topic, and obviously it's a very broad topic, and people have a lot of different opinions. You know, as far as, you know, our planet, it's the only planet we have, so I think we need to take care of it. And there are, of course, many different philosophies out there, but I do think that sometimes golf gets a little bit of a bad rep when it comes to, you know, just the golf course itself. People look at it more from a negative standpoint. You're using a lot of water. There's a lot of fertilization going on, and you know, designing golf courses, which is, you know, I've been lucky to do. I just actually had the grand opening of my first domestic golf course in Minneapolis, and my partner in crime was everybody's friend, Mr. Arnold Palmer. So I designed the front nine, he designed the back nine, so they call it the king and the queen. And obviously it was a huge feather in my hat and an honor for me to work with Mr. Palmer. But having said that, you know, you just think of golf and what it has to offer, and you'd be really, and it's interesting to know that many, many new inventions have come from the golf course design business, because we have been forced to follow some of the rules and, you know, just the laws as far as what we can do and not do. And it's been fascinating. Like this time release fertilization actually comes from a golf course, which they now use in landscaping around the world. And actually comes from golf. So again, sometimes goes back to your first anecdote when we talked about difficult situations. Golf has really been instrumental in coming up with new innovations to make sure that we take care of the environment, that we think about golf courses, how we, you know, how do we build something that will sustain for a long time? I think we all know that water is going to be the biggest, resource that we will maybe in 10 years will be missing. As a matter of fact, we already see it in California and some other areas. Right. And I think it's just going to be a matter of time. So I think golf has been an instrumental part of that. We should give golf a credit because we do come up with new ideas. But it is interesting with the global warming and so forth. I mean, it's just we see things in different parts of the world we've never seen before.
Right, right, right. That's very insightful and very helpful. The next anecdote is under the category in the book of forecasting the future. It goes like this. When the Yankees signed Babe Ruth in 1930 to a two-year contract worth $160,000, general manager then, the name was Ed Barrow, proudly exclaimed, "No one will ever be paid more." And so I'm glad Mr. Barrow is no longer alive. He'd have some tough questions to answer. But what I wanted to ask you about is not the issue of athlete salaries in general, but are we making progress, and will we continue to narrow the gap between men's and women's salary, compensation, rewards, whatever you want to call it. Are we making any progress?
I think we are. It's a slow progress, if I may say. I feel very lucky to be in a generation where we were fortunate, obviously thanks to the founders of the LPGA to have a place to play, a place to fulfill our dreams, competing around the world and making a living on that. Not every female athlete is that lucky, but tennis and golf are two of the sports where I would say that the gap is closer towards the men. But, it's interesting. It is a slow process. But I think if you just look at it across the board with women in business, the last few years has been a big push of trying to get women in C-suites. And I know several companies on the LPGA are pushing that. And studies show that female athletes, make great employees and also make great leaders, because they know what it takes to be successful. And of course, young boys do that too. But as far as, not every athlete will become a professional athlete. So thinking about the future and thinking about the importance of introducing kids to sports is it's not just to excel in that particular sport, but they can excel in other things like in business. And so I think that, moving forward in the next 5 years, I think we're going to see a lot more women and C-suites. I think we're seeing already a trend of changing that it's okay to balance, family and, business and work. I know in the past, it's almost like a lot of female are afraid to take on a big job because, they feel the guilt of not being home with their family, but now it's more acceptable. I think it's, people admire people that say they have a family and this respect my time. I do the best I can, in the office, but, have that balance. So I think things are changing. And I think as far as sports goes, the more the women can get on TV, the bigger demand. But Charlie, as you know, being the commissioner of the LPGA, you've had a lot of interesting meetings with corporate America where where the mindset might have been a little bit old fashioned. But once they got their foot in the game by playing in a pro-am, they realized how genuine, how nice these female golfers are and really how much they give back. So we're just going to continue to push, and we have to believe that one day this gap will be smaller.
I'm sure that I really genuinely believe that it will. The next anecdote certainly is one that I can identify with you. It's under the category of hard work, and certainly you've been a hard worker at everything you've done. But here's the way the anecdote goes. A man prayed and asked God to help him win the lottery. Every day he renewed his prayer and finally said, "God, won't you please help me win the lottery?" To his absolute amazement, the skies darkened, lightning flashed, and a strong, deep voice said, "Would you at least buy a ticket?" The lesson here is obvious. We so often expect good things to happen without effort, and they rarely do. Would you comment on the place of hard work in your life?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. And I can't think of anything that's worth talking about that's not taking effort from anybody. I have a story that my dad, it's a story, but it really wasn't, I think it was more of advice from my dad that just still sticks to me and, as far as my life. And I was 15 years old, and I was hitting balls in the driving range, and it started to rain, and I didn't think it was not so much fun. I got cold, so I called my dad and said, "Hey, can you please pick me up?" And he picked me up, and we drove away, and when we, drove away, we could see other kids on the driving range hitting balls in the rain. And I'll never forget, my dad turned to me, and he said, "Annika, I just want you to know that there are no shortcuts to success."
Good.
And I'll never forget that. And because I don't think he meant it, but I felt a guilt. I wanted to be a good player. I wanted to be successful. And here I was, I kind of gave up because I was a little cold and a little wet. And I realized that, if I'm going to get anywhere, I just got to play golf through, rain or sun or wind or whatever. There's some things you just got to deal with, and it makes you stronger. So And I think another good thing to think about is, you know, you can do anything, but not everything. You know, it's, you just gotta go out there and things will not be handed to you. You gotta earn it. And when you earn something, there's nothing, the feeling is amazing.
Well, as the Lord said, you gotta buy a ticket. you certainly did that. This next anecdote is funny about golf. It was a BC comic strip some years ago, and I thought every golfer should ponder this message. It went like this. In the first segment, BC was explaining golf to his girlfriend, and he said the object is to hit the ball as few times as possible. In the second panel, his girlfriend repeats, somewhat puzzled, "So the object of the game is to hit the ball as few times as possible?" When BC says yes, she then says, "Then why hit it at all?" and walks away. Then in the final panel, BC is sitting alone in the dark, staring at the moon, repeating in an almost dazed way, "Then why hit it at all?" I couldn't help but laugh at that. And as you know, nobody loves golf and what it stands for more than I, but it was funny. And I welcome your reaction.
I think it's really funny too. I guess people that don't play golf don't realize the beauty and the challenge of golf. Because, you know, a lot of times people go in the first hole, they might have a 9 or 10, and then they turn to each other and say, "Well, now you have 17 more of these."
That's right. Well, I think anybody who's ever played golf knows that although the object is to hit the ball as few times as possible, it's not just the score. It's the camaraderie, the environment, the fun. So there's a lot more to golf than scoring, although obviously as a professional, scoring was critical.
I would agree with you there, Charlie. And also, honestly, if you think of it, I mean, what other sports that we know of that you are your own kind of rules official, your own referee? I mean, you're out there on your own, and, you know, it's just we trust each other that you don't you know, fix up your lie, and that you don't, you know, you report the right score, and, you know, all of that. And I think that's what makes golf so special, because it really, you know that you go out in business and you'd like to get to know somebody. Go and play 18 holes with a person. You get to know them as characters. You know, do they listen to advice?
Yeah.
You know, do they cheat? There's so many things that you learn about somebody on the golf course. So that fits very well under honesty.
The next one is under the category in the book of intelligence, and it's a quote about Albert Einstein, in which he made clear that he didn't have much use for rote learning. Instead, his creative genius stemmed from his ability to imagine concepts. And he summed this up once by saying, imagination is more important than knowledge. What I'd be interested in your thoughts there is, I think a number of the great players have commented that they like to imagine a shot. They like to think about where the shot's going to go. And that's an important part of their routine. Now, sadly, in my case, I never wanted to imagine my shot because it made me cry. But with great players, imagination, I think, plays a real part. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, visualization or just seeing a shot before you hit it is really important. And when you see something, and again, try to see a good shot, trying to visualize your best shots, and then you turn that vision into a feeling and then into emotion. And I would say the same thing. I mean, I lay in bed and I think about, you know, obviously not so much now, but when I played, is I'd lay there and I visualize around the golf that I need to play the next day. I visualize what it's like to walk down the 18th fairway. I mean, a good example would be the A&A Inspiration, which is our first major of the year. We have a beautiful walk of champions down up to the 18th green, and just living those feelings in my mind before you go there makes it easier to obviously to handle all the pressure, but it just makes you more comfortable. Because I tell people, if you've kind of done it in your mind, then it's going to feel more natural when you do it. And I mean, there's a lot of things that I can think of that I've done, and in my career just to help myself with my goals, with my vision of being the best player in the world, seeing myself standing on a podium with a big trophy, or, you know, having a gold medal around your neck or something, just to get that positive image and vision going. And I can tell you that in the national team, the Swedish national team, we talked about Vision 54, meaning, you know, shooting 18 under par,
birdie
every hole. And I know a lot of people thought that, well, you know, there's a little giggle to it. You know, that's impossible. It's never been done. But, you know, I had my best round of golf March 16, 2001, when I shot 59 and was the first female golfer to break 60. And I honestly believe that in my mind, I have always thought I could. And when I got that close, you know, I was just going to keep on going. So
right.
To anybody out there, you know, dream big. And, you know, if you necessarily don't get to the top, at least you will get halfway. And that's a lot further than when you were last time.
So. That's so, so true. The final anecdote is in the, near the end of the book, under What's Really Important in Life. And it's a quote. I don't know who said it. I wish I did, but it goes like this. In life, you will realize there's a role for everyone you meet. Some will test you. Some will use you. Some will love you. And some will teach you. But the ones who are truly important are the ones who bring out the best in you. They are the rare and amazing people who remind you why it's worth it. I love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. It really is. And, you know, you never know what life will take you or where the journey will take you. And I can say that in golf, I always felt like I was in control of my game and my plan and so forth. But it changed quickly when I became a mother. Just because you can't plan things the way you do.
Right.
I have to go with the flow a little bit. And especially when our second child was born, Will, our son, he was born at, 27 weeks, so 13 weeks prematurely. And that was really quite a test for all of us, and the uncertainty of life and not knowing what the future would hold. So,
yes,
you know, it's, we just got to appreciate what we have and make the most out of it. And what do they say? They say yesterday's history, tomorrow is a mystery, today is the present, so make it a gift.
That's great. And heaven knows Will is a buster now. He's the happiest little guy. And of course, Ava as well. I just wanted to close this by noting that in the book, I tell the story from my point of view of you and Arnold talking about your playing in the men's event at the Colonial and his initial, not concern, but just uncertainty as to why you were doing it. And in the anecdote, I point out that I sat down with him after you and he had talked, and I thought to myself, maybe I can get to him this way. And so I said, Arnold, let's think about it this way. If there was another tour above the PGA Tour, wouldn't you want to play on it? Wouldn't you want to see how good you were in comparison with those people? And he looked at me like I was half. He said, of course I would. And I said, well, that's really all Annika's doing. She simply wants to test her skill level and give it her best. Any thoughts you might have on that whole business?
Yeah, I think we interpreted the story the same. I was a little puzzled or a little confused why he didn't really embrace, you know, the situation, but I certainly understand where he was coming from. But I was also very glad that you kind of explained it from, you know, maybe a view that he understood or can see it more clearly.
Right.
And that's just what life is about. Is for me anyway, obviously it's, you know, trying to get better at what you do, learning from others. But I think the moral of there is just kind of follow your passion, follow what you like. And, you know, there's different ways to success, different recipes for success. And I think, You know, sometimes you just don't know unless you're in that person's shoe. It's very easy to have opinions unless you really have the whole story. And I think I've learned that lesson many times, you know, when you quickly come to a little conclusion without really knowing the reason why. And you know, the reason why in this particular case, it was just I wanted to be better. It was in 2003. I had been number one for a few years, and I was looking for ways to continue to push myself. I felt in the back of my mind, I can get better. But I needed something different, something extra to really push it. And this was an amazing opportunity at that time. And I worked so hard and I got ready. And, you know, I'll never forget. I mean, I walked away from that event and I felt like I had matured. I had grown up. I had gotten better. It was one of the biggest lessons, but also one of the, you know, the best highlights of my career by just getting this opportunity. So don't turn away opportunities. You never know what, where they will take you.
Well, you're so right. And you handled yourself superbly in that appearance. And I think it came away as a home run. Well, you've been so gracious with your time, and we really appreciate it. You've really added a lot of insights to the book. I'm hopeful that people will enjoy the book and that they'll get some tips from it. I frankly wish that when I had been in my 30s, someone had written a book like this. But now I have, and I hope others will enjoy it. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. And I mean, you, first of all, Charlie, you're a great speaker, but I think what really makes this book is fun is all these different stories and quick little notes from different people's different walk of life. And I think that just adds a lot to it. So thank you for putting this together. And I have enjoyed reading it, and I know I will use it as a little kind of go-to when I have to give my next speech.
Thanks for joining me for today's conversation. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please visit totalanecdotal.co or search for 15 Minutes with Charlie in your podcasting app. If you are enjoying the show, you should check out my book, Total Anecdotal, a fun guide to help you become a better speaker and writer. Learn more at totalanecdotal.co/book. That's totalanecdotal.co/book, or it's available through Amazon or Barnes & Noble and perhaps your local bookstore.